Welcome, and thanks for listening to Intrinsic Investigations. My name is Mr. Olivo, and I created this podcast because I've been fortunate enough over the last decade to see unique and thought-provoking projects happen in my classroom, and we wanted a place to showcase them. The true heart of this podcast lies not in the content discovered, but in exploring the personal stories of these young researchers as they journey through uncharted and unfamiliar intellectual terrain. By sharing their stories, we hope to normalize the challenges and frustrations that come with independent research, and also share those moments where students transcend the normal grind of the school day to discover concepts that range from the global to deeply personal. We will begin with a brief introduction to the student of focus, why they picked their topic, and discuss their growth over the course of the last year. It should be mentioned that the opinions expressed in this podcast in no way reflect the opinions of our school district, Bergen County Technical Schools and Special Services, or our school itself, Bergen County Technical High School Teterboro, or the College Board. The work detailed in this podcast was most likely completed in AP Capstone, but this podcast is in no way affiliated with the College Board. For this episode, Daniel's going to raise awareness of peace journalism and where we can find it in our media. Today's episode is a special one for a couple of reasons, but I would say the first one is the whole idea for this podcast popped into my mind during the Q&A sessions after the big presentations for this course during Daniel's work. And it was really interesting to see how much Daniel could elaborate on his topic beyond what the expectations were for the College Board. And I thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to have a venue for these students to talk about things just bigger than just the findings and allow them to be more elaborative in what it is that they discovered about their topics and themselves. So I'm going to thank Daniel before introducing him. So thank you, Daniel.
You're welcome.
That's right. They can't see your head nodding because it's a podcast. All right, Daniel, you want to introduce yourself, tell people a little bit about who you are and what your topic was.
Yep. I'm Daniel Pack. I'm a student here at BT. I'm a junior in the business major. And my research in this AP research class was about the usage of peace journalism and war journalism in the coverage of the current ongoing Russian-Ukrainian conflict on YouTube and on the channels that news outlets utilize on YouTube and the videos they post.
So I think the first thing we need to get into then is, what is peace journalism?
Yeah, so peace journalism is actually kind of a more recent phenomenon. It was developed in the later 20th century by Johann Galtung. He's actually still alive today, and he's one of the foremost experts in the field of peace studies. He basically created the entire field. And what that basically entails is journalism that, rather than emphasizing the violence and the promoting escalatory language and more violent and, you know, the gory aspects of the conflict, you would more emphasize the you try to empathize with the people suffering within the conflict, and you would mostly emphasize the people that are suffering on both sides. You would try to uncover the lies and the propaganda that are being spread by governments on both sides of the conflict, and you're essentially trying to prevent further escalation in the conflict and find a peaceful resolution via covering the relevant aspects of the conflict that would make it easier to do that.
And the flip of it is war journalism, which I'm guessing is what we're more used to in our coverage of geopolitical conflict. I'm hesitant to use the word war because then war journalism is what we're used to seeing when we're looking at coverage of war. Sounds a bit redundant.
Actually, yeah. So, I mean, war journalism is very similar to, I think, what Mr. Oliva, you mentioned before we started the podcast, yellow journalism, which is over-sensationalizing the conflicts within the conflicts that are ongoing and utilizing journalism to emphasize the negative aspect of the conflict and trying to utilize essentially propaganda to stir hatred and resentment against the side of the conflict that you would like to escalate against or provoke outrage or violence against. And that's essentially emphasizing the parts of the conflict that are completely opposite to what you would emphasize in peace journalism. Peace journalism, you would emphasize creating empathy and emphasizing the suffering of the people within the conflict. War journalism, you're just focusing on what the other side is doing wrong and what they have done to wrong you and why you should escalate and essentially act violently against them.
And you're a junior in high school. And what you're focusing on the Russia-Ukraine war. What prompted you to pick this?
Yes. So I've kind of been interested in geography for a while now. Actually, my interest in it came from a funny story. I was watching the movie, what was it, The Day After Tomorrow or something like that? It was
the one where the world freezes?
Yes, that one. And
is Jake Gyllenhaal in that?
I don't remember, but
you're going to make me look this up. Go ahead. Elaborate on your world freezing adventure.
I was watching the movie with my family, and it was essentially describing like three gigantic geomagnetic storms that were ongoing in the world. And they said, oh, one of them is over Canada, one of them is over Scotland, and one of them is over Siberia. And I was watching this. I realized that I did not know where Scotland was. And I was like, I should probably know this. So I was like, okay, let me try to figure out what this, like, where Scotland is. And I was looking into that, and I was like, oh, this is cool. Scotland's part of the UK. UK is part of the European, is part of Europe, and that includes a bunch of different countries. And I started getting, like, deeper and deeper into that rabbit hole of looking to see, oh, where is this country? Where is this country? Oh, that's kind of interesting, this geographic thing that I did not even know about. And I eventually found like this website, Jetpunk. It has so many quizzes, geography quizzes. I use that a lot to essentially like learn new stuff about geography. And that's essentially how I learned, like, oh, I really love learning new stuff about geography, the world that I live in, and like all the different countries, the cities, the cultures that exist in the world. And that was like in fifth, sixth grade-ish. And then, you know, we get into high school, and then I'm in freshman year, and then the Russia-Ukraine war sparks up again. And there's this whole, it's essentially like one of the biggest news headlines since like the COVID-19 pandemic.
And for sure.
Like one of the biggest conflicts, like a lot of news outlets are saying, in Europe since World War II. And obviously that's very interesting to me as someone who's interested in geopolitics and geography and stuff like that. So I was following that very closely as the news, as news outlets were covering the story. And and I was following it like for 6 months, 12 months, into a year and a half. And then last year, junior year, no, sophomore year, I was in AP Research, and we were doing a final project that involved doing a content analysis on something of our choice.
Oh, in seminar.
Yes, yeah, in seminar. Okay. And I was still following the Russia-Ukraine war at that point. And I realized, I've also seen information about, like, oh, how Western media is biased for Ukraine, and they're they're demonizing Russia and the Russian troops in Ukraine. And I was thinking, oh, that's interesting. Maybe I could, like, look into how Western media covers the Russian-Ukraine war and whether that might be biased against Russia or biased for Ukraine. So I did that content analysis. I did that in seminar. That was pretty interesting. And then I go into AP Research, and I'm like, oh, I should, I'm still interested in whatever we did last year. Maybe I should do something very similar, the same. And so I looked into that, And I was basically looking into previous analyses of news media and how they covered conflicts. And I was just like looking for general ideas of where to start. Because like, obviously, if I just go into saying, looking for instances where Russia is, or where Western media is biased towards Ukraine or biased against Russia, that's very broad. That can have a lot of different aspects.
Valid.
So I look into that, and then I find something about peace journalism. And I'm like, oh, this looks interesting. Maybe I could use that later. So I put that in my Google Doc, and I save it. I kind of forget about it. And then I'm still looking for ideas and stuff. And then I come back a week later, and then I see that. I'm like, okay, maybe I should take a look at this. So I look into that, and it's basically describing an entire framework that's already been created. That's the peace journalism framework. And that has like essentially a list of criteria where you can be like, oh, this is describing the other side having started the conflict, emphasizing that point specifically. That would be under war journalism, because that's emphasizing what the other side did wrong. And that has like that list of criteria that has under both war journalism and peace journalism. And that basically gave me a framework where I could be like, oh, this is something specific that I can use to code stuff in my content analysis, and then develop my research off of that. And then after that, I was like, okay, cool. So I have this peace journalism framework that I can use to code for my content analysis. But then I got this peace journalism framework, and I was like, okay, cool, I'll use this for my content analysis. But then what I had to figure out was, okay, what am I going to analyze, right? Because in the seminar project, I basically analyzed a couple, I think it was New York Times articles. And, you know, that's interesting. But then I looked more into like peace journalism and other studies that have done peace journalism. And they were all mostly from 2000s, 2010s. And basically one of the most prominent forms of news communication during that time was online news articles and articles in general. But then you get to like now, where you have social media, you have online video platforms like YouTube, where news outlets can post videos and basically communicate the news to their viewers. And I was looking through the former studies, and I was like, okay, there's a lot of stuff here about articles and analyzing articles, but there isn't a lot here about looking at videos or image or visual media in general. And so I decided, okay, that seems interesting. I'll try to go into that. And that'll also help differentiate my work from other peace journalism studies within the field. So I decided to look at videos that were posted by news outlets on the Russia-Ukraine war and analyze that using the peace journalism framework that I found in the previous peace journalism studies.
Okay. So I just want to recap, because that was 4 minutes of a lot of things going on here. But correct me if I'm wrong here. It all starts in middle school with the, let's say, highly critically mixed movie The Day After Tomorrow, starring Jake Gyllenhaal and Dennis Quaid, directed by Roland Emmerich. And then it morphs into a fascination with geography, driven by your own deficiencies of recognizing, I don't know where Scotland is. So then it just sends you down that rabbit hole. And then just a couple of stop-and-go moments where you're getting into more into like geopolitics, and then sort of filing things away over time. And then it ends with peer-reviewed work that gives a framework for how to differentiate between peace and war journalism. Is that...
Yeah, it gave you a framework.
So you have this framework. What, and you mentioned that you didn't want to just work with articles. You wanted to work with things that were beyond that, because the nature of news has radically changed in the last 20 years, it's radically changed in the last 5 years. Like since COVID, the way that we get information, the way that we process information has obviously changed. So what did you do with this framework in the context of your project?
So I essentially used the framework and the criteria that they gave, and I applied that to the videos that I was looking at. So I would look at the video and I would play it, and I would essentially wait for a moment in the video where it fulfills one of the criteria that was listed. So like I mentioned before, one of the criteria under war journalism was emphasizing the other side's side of the conflict. And in this case, that would be Western media saying Russia began the invasion of Ukraine, you know, on February 24th, 2022. And, you know, that, you know, that whether or not that's true, which I think most of us will agree that Russia did initiate the escalation to the Russia-Ukraine war, and that at the time by invading Ukraine. It's the emphasis of that point over and over again that makes it war journalism, rather than shifting emphasis towards the suffering civilians in the war, and essentially using the fact that Russia started this escalation to justify further escalation against Russia. That would be what makes it war journalism. So I would essentially try to find videos or timestamps in the video that fulfilled these types of criteria, and then I would code it peace journalism or war journalism, and then the type of criteria, and then make a little note for myself like how it fulfills the criteria. And then I'll essentially do that for all the videos that I analyzed. I'll compile that and then essentially see whether peace journalism or war journalism was more utilized, and what types of criteria were also more utilized.
And what were the news outlets that you used for your video source base?
Yeah, I looked at CNN, I looked at Fox News, and I looked at ABC News. And the reason why I looked at them is that they were the... I essentially found a list of the most credible American news outlets, or at least the most credible according to the U.S. public, or that were surveyed. And I used that list to essentially go through each of the news outlets that were on that list. And they were all essentially like major news outlets like ABC, MSNBC. And I would go on YouTube and see, oh, do they have a YouTube channel? And if they did, how many subscribers do they have? And I essentially used that to find the channel that had the most subscribers, because obviously the channel that has the most subscribers likely has the most reach. And that makes it more likely for people to see the video, makes it more likely for whatever they play in the video to have a bigger impact. So I essentially used that to find the channels that had the most subscribers. That ended up being CNN, then ABC News, then Fox News.
And what do you now know about the representation of peace and war journalism that other people should know?
So essentially what I found in my research was that there is a significant difference in the usage of war journalism and peace journalism. Essentially, the news outlets that I analyzed use war journalism more than peace journalism. And, you know, that essentially says, hey, they're pushing this information that will, in which they're essentially trying to justify further escalation, further violence against the other side within this conflict, rather than emphasizing the parts of the conflict where people are suffering and where we can try to find ways to stop this suffering and try to bring a peaceful end, a peaceful resolution to the conflict. And, you know, that's obviously important, because if people know this, they'll be less likely to be as gullible into believing that escalation is necessary within the conflict, and be able to realize, hey, maybe violence isn't always the answer. Maybe we can find more peaceful, less escalatory means towards approaching the conflict. And another thing that I found was there was no significant difference in peace journalism or war journalism utilization between the different news outlets. I did find that from my content analysis that Fox News used more instances of war journalism, but the difference was not significant.
So Fox News compared to CNN, even though people want to put them on different ideological spectrums, let's say, there's no difference in how they report news about war.
Yes.
Based on your statistical analysis.
Yeah.
Did you use a chi-square test, or how did you?
I used both the chi-square test and an ANOVA test.
And neither of those showed, even though there was slightly more.
The chi-square test was for the difference between news outlets. That showed no significant correlation.
Okay.
The ANOVA test looked for the difference between peace journalism and war journalism. That showed a significant difference.
Okay. So to sort of take your stats and just make it clear, there is a difference between how the American news outlets you analyze, so CNN, Fox News, and ABC?
ABC.
Look at, or I should say write about, peace and war journalism. War journalism being more highly represented in a statistically significant way. However, between those outlets, even though Fox News may have a slightly higher amount of war journalism representation, it's not significant. So they're all pretty equal in how much they push this type of narrative when it comes to geopolitical conflict.
Yes.
Were you surprised by this, or no? Were you just like, okay, this makes sense with what I've observed since I watched The Day After Tomorrow and I started getting into geopolitical affairs?
Yeah, so I think similar to most people, I have the belief that Western media, in the U.S. especially, tends to over-sensationalize things in the news. So that brought me to my research thinking, oh yeah, war journalism is probably going to be used more than peace journalism. So yes, that the first part, that justified my belief. I did not, however, expect that there would be no significant difference between news outlets, because at least from what I've been exposed to in society in general, I had the expectation that Fox News is a more right-wing source. They're more prone to emphasizing escalatory manners against our geopolitical rivals, which Russia is one of them. So I was expecting, hey, maybe CNN will use more war journalism than peace journalism, but Fox News will do that to a greater extent, which maybe they did in my content analysis, but that difference could easily be chalked up to
random chance. Yeah.
So what I found in my study essentially shows, at the current moment, there is no difference in how they cover the conflict between at least CNN, more characterized as a left-leaning source, and Fox News, more characterized as a right-leaning source. And political position on the political spectrum doesn't really determine how you cover a conflict.
These are interesting findings. What do you think then, let's say someone is a casual consumer of the news or an avid consumer of the news. I don't know. This is just my personal opinion, but I feel that the consuming of news is probably higher than it's been in quite some time, just because of technically a TikTok post can be news to you. So whether or not I think that news is quality is a whole nother story, but people are being exposed to information that could count as quote-unquote news constantly. Ukraine and Russia, you have the situation in Gaza and Israel. Look, what should people keep in mind based on the work that you did as they approach the consumption of news?
I think people should approach whatever they find online in general with the mentality that this could easily be misinformation, or you could easily fabricate whatever is being said. And obviously I'm not saying like everything on the information on the internet is false. There is a lot of like important information out there, but it's very easy if you don't utilize like digital awareness, for example, like looking at different sources to see if they say the same thing. It's very easy to believe something that you see once on the internet and say, oh, that must be true, I just saw it, rather than looking through other sources and seeing, oh, is this actually true? Is this actually what's happening?
So kind of building consensus.
Yes. And
can I pose something, though? Because I think your work actually is not as extreme as falsification and fabrication. I think your work is just about how it's said. So while the information could be the same, because of the language and the framing that's used for it, it's painted as a conflict and not a humanitarian issue. And once you stop seeing people as humans and you're willing to just escalate at any cost possible for whatever particular ideology you're putting out there, that's when lives are lost. And ultimately someone's going to look, people look back on, we'll look at Russia and Ukraine and look back and be like, oh, this was terrible. How could we let it get this bad? So I agree with you that I think media literacy is important, but I think that your work is actually about something that's way more subtle, but probably as harmful as quote unquote, I'm using quote unquote multiple times in this podcast, but fake news, if that makes sense. I don't know if you disagree, that's totally fine. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a lot of what is we generally have like the idea that misinformation is something that is completely false. That is to say, like, I am in like Canada right now. That is completely false.
This is true. We are not broadcasting from Canada right now.
Yeah. But,
or are we? We're on the North American continent.
Yeah. But if I were to present that in a different way, if I were to say like we are presenting west of the Atlantic, right? It's
just outside of New York City.
Yes. It's hard to tell whether I'm presenting from Canada or Mexico or the United States or Brazil, right? So it's essentially both the withholding of truthful information that can be misinformation, and also the misrepresentation of truthful and accurate information. It's that can be misinformation. It's not just completely false information. And like you said, that's really that can be just as dangerous as having completely false information be on the internet if you have true information being misrepresented. And I think, yeah, what my work here essentially shows that people have to know how their information is being presented to them and try to look at what is essentially going on and remove any analysis that is going on from news outlets and sources and see and draw their own conclusions.
Well, yeah, they have to recognize, that's a great point, they have to recognize the limitations of the information that they consume. Not one source is going to tell you the absolute truth on anything. You have to build consensus through multiple pieces. It's almost like an investigation. And unfortunately, I feel we're inundated with so much news that it's hard to really carry out multiple investigations to do the detective work to really figure out. So I guess as the consumer of information, you have to be critical of what it is you even want to get into, because as you showed earlier in your detailing of the day after tomorrow and where that led, we could go down a lot of rabbit holes, but you might lose some truth by just staying superficial. Like you just dig a little and then you're like, I'm tired now of this one rabbit hole. You might walk away with a lot of falsehoods in your head and notions that are could be ultimately wrong, that you wouldn't even be aware of.
Yep, that's exactly right.
So interesting. This, we ran a little overtime on this one, and we talked a lot about your work itself, but what do you think the most important thing for you was in doing this project? Personally, like beyond the content.
Yeah.
And we'll end with that.
I think as someone who is a very avid consumer of the news, probably more than the average person. I spend a lot of time on the Apple News app on my phone in a day. I think that essentially showed me there really is no significant difference in where I get my news from. Obviously, there might be some source like that is far more left-leaning or far more right-leaning. But every source is going to be biased in some way. They're going to show the information that they want to show in the light that they want to show. So I feel like for me, what that shows is, number one, I should, instead of maybe just like reading a single news article about a topic and then moving on straight to the next one, maybe I should dig a little bit deeper into that. And maybe I should look at, hey, what's actually going on? What caused all this? And why is it going on? Is it because of what the news actually said? Or is it because of something else that they're trying not to talk about because that would undermine their entire narrative?
And that deeper historical context might add more nuance to the they started it mentality that you were detailing before.
Yep.
Like, they started it. Oh, no, you started it. Because that's going to happen no matter what.
Yep.
But unfortunately, that's all the time we have. That's the bell. You can hear people getting up to leave class right now. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Mr. Oliva.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.